I have to admit, there is a basic physics problem which I set up for myself, which I can't solve. It's actually beaten me. So perhaps you might be a bit bored of me explaining things I do know. There's something I don't know. In fact, overall, there's heaps of stuff which I don't know. I'm really struggling with relearning some physics and stuff like that, electromagnetic radiation, all that type of stuff. But this is a very simple thing. This is a weight on a string wrapped around a pole and allowed to actually rotate under gravity in ever descending spirals, widening spirals downwards. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm going to have a go at just describing where I'm up to. This is Peter Hill Explains. And indeed, this is a conversation, a science conversation, between a podcaster and its audience, and there may be some interest to see how I've struggled to answer this. Now, the motivation for the podcast is to learn how to talk coherently and consistently about ideas and communicate a range of ideas, fairly complex ideas, exam questions, physics problems, lesson ideas, all that type of stuff. And the idea is, no, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes and I look at it, and in general, I have to do two or three podcasts in an area and to pick up a general thing that I should do. And then it takes one or two more to actually tune it up and get it all right. So let's look at this actual particular experiment. And I'll describe it, and then I'll say why you'd want to do it. The experiment is, you have a broom handle, and the broom handle is a pole. Basically, the broom's not important, but that's the broom's at the bottom of the floor. The pole sticks up, or a metre, 30 centimetres, something like that. It's got a hole in the top to hook up the broom. Typically, if you don't have a hole, you can use you can affix a piece of string with a piece of sticky tape. Now, you get a length of string roughly 1.5 times the length of the pole. So if the pole's 1.3 metres long, you get a piece of string about 2 metres long. Affix one end of the string and carefully wrap the string around the top of the pole in a spiral, in a coil, so to speak. You can wrap it downwards or upwards. I haven't done upwards. Downwards is a general thing. And then to the end of that string, you attach a weight. You can just tie any sort of weight. If you're in a physics lab, you'll probably have a little plumb blob to attach to it, or a brass ball with a hole in it, or a lead sinker, there's lots of little things you can do. If you're really struggling, you've got a marble and you want to know how to attach a marble, wrap the marble in silver foil, twist the silver foil up so it's got a nice little tail, and then you can twist that tail onto the piece of string rather nicely. And so if you're not tall enough, 6 foot's about the general height. You can be smaller. Obviously, the angle of your arm is sufficient to hold it far enough away. You can release the weight. So have it all coiled up, and then you release the weight. You can give it a little bit of push. I don't think it's going to really all that much matter. And what will happen is as the string pulls, as it gathers tension from pulling down, it will tend to pull from a little off the axis of the string, of the pole, tend to give it some radial acceleration, just a small amount of radial acceleration. But that's really important, a small amount of radial acceleration, and then it will radially accelerate. That is not the radial acceleration, the velocity will slowly increase, but the radius will also increase. So there's an energy transfer for there, and you'll see it go out, and you'll get a general impression that's around, looking at it coming down, it's roughly 30 degrees, somewhere between 30 and 40 degrees that it circumscribes as it comes down. It's a fairly constant thing. You can give it a push, but it settles down pretty much to the same orbit as it comes down. Now, before we get into explaining where I'm up to and where I'm sort of stuck working through, and I have a few uncomfortable dead ends I'm at working through, and you'll listen to this, I won't spend too long on it. Well, why would you want to do this in a school? Well, there's several things. One is the classic spitting a stopper around your head on a string and having it go through a pipe and then measuring the weight, the centripetal acceleration. Let's go through. The centripetal acceleration is V squared on R, or omega squared R, where V squared is the velocity and R is the radius, or omega is the angular velocity. So if it's got an angular velocity of 1, it covers 2 pi radians per 1. That's what an the units of angular velocity are in. But okay, so the problems in doing that is that you do have a risk. I think it's actually been banned in Australian schools, or some people have banned it because there's a risk of the weight falling off and people hurting themselves doing it. Didn't actually meet the strenuous risk assessments that we have here, even though it's a very valuable piece of information. Then you've got the idea of orbits at different radiuses. So you can see it orbiting at different radius, and centripetal force, and a whole lot of tension force, gravitational force, and you've got the age-old, I might as well address it now, is whether you go in and tell students that there is such thing as a centripetal force. Let's be fairly clear about it. The forces are forces that you can actually hang a force meter onto. So you can get the gravitational force of mg and the centripetal force of mv squared r. Those add together and they're unbalanced force, and they lead to centripetal acceleration. So the centripetal force is the resultant force. It's the label we put on the... It's resultant force, centripetal force, it's the same thing. And when you're doing those vectors, when you draw the vectors, if I can say, you actually go through several steps. So let's go through it. And this is in the aid of why you'd want to do this experiment in class. You've got your tension force acting on the body. So you draw that on the body diagram, and you have the gravitational force acting on the body in the body diagram. And then in the vector diagram, which you move the head to tail, so you move the tail of the vector of the tension force down to the head of the gravitational force, and you will have a gap there, which will be the resultant force. Now, for the resultant force, if I can just recommend, this is some older physicists have done it. Physicists in different, I've seen it, I don't know whether in France or some European country, I've suddenly saw it again. And this is where you draw the resultant vector with a double lines to make sure it sticks out as not a vector, not a real force vector that you can actually see there. And so you put the resultant vector, which has got its tail at the start of the gravitational force and finishing at the end of the tension force, a little double line, and that's R, and R equals mgh. Oh, sorry, mass times acceleration is mv squared on r. That's roughly it. Now, of course, there's a bit more to it, because it's just not in those two dimensions. The tension is actually not through the centre of the broom, but it's actually displaced off into the radius of the broom. That's where I'm at. And so there's all that, the great things to teach is something. It's got all the features that you want in a good demonstration. It's a it takes a while to happen, so people can actually see and think, have a few thoughts while it's happening. It's repeatable. It's something that they can do, and the students can do, and they can repeat, and they can start to compare. They can sort of make hypotheses. One hypothesis which sort of sticks with me rather well, but I can't actually formulate it, and this is the thing, is that the angle seems to be the same. As it goes down, I'm sure that's perhaps not true. And then there's a few other hypotheses. So it's got all the good aspects of being visible, being safe, repeatable, being sufficiently slow. So if you suddenly drop something, it happens too quickly. The actual thinking time can't happen all the time to get through. And it's something which is open ended. Perhaps it's attractive to the fact that I can't quite solve it. So the thing that I really want to get to is not the angle in degrees, but the angle as a ratio. What is the ratio between the... What is the angle of the string coming down? So the string comes down from the last point of contact on the pole, and goes down to a plane in which the weight is spiraling downwards. So that's the H, and the R is again... pretty good. It's somewhere between the actual axis of the broom and the actual edge of the broom, because the actual point of contact of the broom is a few degrees out for its last point of contact. So it's not perfect, and it's, you know, a little bit complex to go in. But that's the angle, the apparent angle at which it hangs down. Now the energy of it is, the ball has dropped a height. This is from its point of release down to its the current height it's at, and so it'll continue to go out until it hits the ground. But that's slightly different depending on how the string drops or how the string is wound. The last point of contact for getting the angle is a slight different there, so the string may either drop down, or if you've wound it the other way, the string may be working its way up to the top. So you've got MDH, and then the kinetic energy. Well, each way I dice it, the kinetic energy is a half mv squared, the radial velocity, because it's constrained to a radius, more or less. Okay, it's going in a spiral, so it's got a slightly more complex thing. So its velocity is a half mv squared, as if it's been dropped. So what is the energy of the system? Well, the energy of the system is in a point mass, and it's a radial energy. But if you were just to suddenly cut and burn the string, the weight would fly off with the half mv squared. You can actually prove that it's a half mv squared. If you imagine that, if you go through the angular stuff, which is a half I omega squared, which is W squared, the angular velocity, you get the same sort of thing. In actual fact, I was trying to think whether you do get the same thing. You get a half angular momentum. The I is mr, and the angular velocity omega squared is v squared on r. It will have an angular velocity of 2 pi r if it's got a velocity of 2 pi r on v. So its angular velocity will be equal to 1 at 2 pi. I don't know if I expressed that correctly there. So I can see it. It's the same there. The important thing is that the angle is arctan r on h, or really it's what is the r on h value, how does that vary, and the h is proportional to g pointing downwards, and the r is proportional to v squared on r, which is okay. R is proportional to v squared on R for something, but then you get into things which is getting me a little bit confused. I cancel out, when I put in the various values, I cancel out the value of G, and so this is one of the things which has got my head scratching. This should it would orbit more slowly on the moon, but it would still have the same angle on the moon, so I don't know whether that's true. And there's some other things where I get it having the same angle as it goes down. So I'm having a general head scratch. I've reached a dead end here, and perhaps that's interesting. So this is something for if you're pretty smart and you're in a different environment, you can ask. You're able to ask people for help and stuff like that. You'll maybe be able to solve them, and either email me or do your own podcast explaining this. But it's just a fantastic experiment to do in a school, because it's just got that weirdness and resonance and visibility and length of time and safety and communal stuff looking into it, and it's not too finicky on the actual number of measurements that you have to do to get it right. Thanks for listening. This is truly a conversation where I haven't quite got out the answers for it, and there's other areas of I suppose general relativity and stuff like that where I'm still thinking and struggling through. Like I can understand the actual books, but when I actually do my own exercises, I get sort of stuck, still blowing out the cobwebs there. Thanks a lot for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains. In the meantime, keep on thinking and doing, finally teaching science.